Welcome to How to Save Democracy. I'm John, and I seem to spend a lot of my time at the moment in airports. I'm travelling all over the world, partly to find the people who are doing the real work and find their stories and hear them, and partly to then go and tell them on as many platforms as I can. That can make it hard for us to get together and actually record the episodes to share them with all of you, but we have just managed to do that, and there'll be loads more coming soon. I'm off on my travels again, but before I go, I wanted to share one episode with you as soon as possible. I was recently in Australia, and one of the groups I met there was an organisation called The Doing Co. They support people to come together in town teams all across the country. They call themselves a movement of local doers, and they're all about championing a democracy as something we do, not something we have. You're about to meet nightclub promoter turned community organiser Jimmy Murphy, an all-round citizen powerhouse, Kendall Terrell. They're going to tell you the story in their own words. Welcome to How to Save Democracy. Yeah. In Perth. So, let's start with what Town Team Movement is. Kendall.
Thanks, John. So Town Team Movement is an underwriting non-profit social enterprise that has formed and continues to exist to enable active citizenship. So we've been around since 2018, but now there is over 180 active town teams globally. There's only a couple international majority, however, is here in sunny Western Australia. So we have over 150 active town teams here, and over 50% of them, interestingly, are in regional Western Australia.
All right, good. And can you give me a couple of your favourite examples? Maybe span your scale of doing with a few examples.
Sure. So I guess the journey into active citizenship is what we're really sort of focused on, and we appreciate that not everyone's going to be ready to formalise their doing in jumping into a town team straight away. So we have a scale of doing, and we really encourage people to do low-cost, no-cost ideas that give them permission to act locally and really shift mindsets. That's our biggest challenge, going from a passive consumer mindset to an active citizenship mindset, is that permission to act. So we have a wonderful resource called 50 Quick Wins, which is full of these low-cost to no-cost ideas, you know, as simple as drawing a hopscotch on the footpath, you know, making over your letterbox, or, you know, doing some guerrilla planting locally, things like that. And once people get a taste for that, and then they go back to that place where they have contributed, it actually inspires them and motivates them often to do more. And as they're doing more, they're building relationships more broadly. And out of that, what typically starts to happen is that groups can remain informal, but they start to formalise in a way that they mature in their doing. And some of those choose to become a town team. So a town team is a group of residents and business owners that gather together over the notion of place. So, you know, we've got your sporting clubs and your special interest groups. The reason that people gather in terms of a town team is to make their place better. And so they can be unincorporated or incorporated. And we work with them to help them get money, help remove barriers, and help deliver projects locally.
And give me a couple of examples. Bring it to life for me.
Sure. So a wonderful example actually is one that we visited yesterday, didn't we, John, is the Vic Park Collective Shed. So that the Vic Park Collective town team are incredible. They've been around for a while, so definitely more mature in terms of their doing. But they purchased a sea container, and they were able to, they took about 5 years, but they negotiated with the local government to put that in a public space. And then they fitted that out with shelving and equipment that was made available for their local community to borrow. So they have a library of lawnmowers and cooking equipment and outdoor theatres and all wonderful activation and helpful tools and stuff that people can access. So it's $40 a year to have a membership to that collective shed, and then you get your unlimited access so long as it's available. And that it's fully managed by volunteers. All of the items were purchased new which was all sort of fundraised and donated money. So just a really incredible example and a landmark now for them in place that really centres them.
And I've been to see this thing. It's a beautiful bright yellow shipping container and a lovely spot with an enormous fig tree just beside it and a little bench outside. And you can sense it was closed up when we were there because it was wrong time of day. But like that, you could sense that is also a kind of a gathering spot, right? Like, so these things, it's both the specific function, but also the general thing of creating community space. There's one more I'm going to prompt you to share a little bit about, just because hearing about it this morning from you guys blew my mind, which is the GNP 360. So can you translate GNP 360 for the universe?
So GNP 360, big shout out to Cassie. That is a cooperative that exists in a small regional town out in Nowangarup in regional Western Australia. They are a group that have formed to transform their small regional town through the acquisition of local assets. So the story goes, and I might have a little bit of this wrong, but the story goes that their local general store actually burnt down. And so that was obviously a centre point and a gathering point and an important critical amenity in their local town. But no one was coming to save them, so they had to do something about it. And so they purchased that site and then worked to rebuild it and rectify it, and then they ended up selling that to a locally led supermarket chain called IGA, and then they retained that money that was through the sale of that, and then they've gone on to now do other wonderful refurbishments in the town. They've purchased the old pub and they're turning it into the community hub. And they've just started to turn soil actually on the refurbishments of that, which is just wildly incredible. And they've also apparently just struck a deal to do an affordable housing estate in Nowangarup to attract more young families into their regional town centre, which is just really trailblazing in terms of local doing.
So we go all the way from hopscotch on the path to total transformation of a rural town.
Absolutely.
And this is town teams of all shapes and sizes. Now, let's go back to the kind of roots of this and start to think about the underlying philosophy. So what we're exploring in this podcast in How to Save Democracy is this idea that, and Kendall's already started to drop in some of the language that very similar, the same language that you guys use. But we talk about this idea that what we're stuck in at the moment is what you might call a consumer democracy, where people's only agency is to choose between a fixed set of options as to who to give their power to, actually, and where we're encouraged and assumed to make that choice on the basis of individual self-interest. And what we're kind of exploring isn't really how you save that kind of democracy, because we think it's screwed, but how you evolve it and deepen it into what you might call a citizen democracy, where actually people have the agency to shape what the options are, where they're encouraged to be participants in that society, to contribute their ideas and energy and resources to shaping the world that they're part of and the communities that they're in, rather than simply to choose between those options. And this is very much the kind of the underlying philosophy, that the urge that initiated Town Team Movement in the first place, as I understand it. And so we're gonna hear first from John Carey, who has now become quite a big name politician in Western Australia, but whose story started with initiating the first Town Team in Beaufort Street. And now, having heard from John, we're going to meet Jimmy Murphy. And so, Jimmy, you were one of the next people into this thing as it moved from being Beaufort Street Network to being Town Team Movement. Can you tell us a bit about that and about your sort of personal motivation for getting involved and where you were before?
So John mentioned he started the Beaufort Street Network, and then they did this incredible thing called the Beaufort Street Festival, and I was a nightclub promoter and event organizer in the neighboring town, which is called Leederville. And we were watching what was happening in Beaufort Street. And we were like, wow, that is so cool. Like, we want to do that in Leederville. So we started, so the like some of the traders and residents, we started getting together and we were like, oh, we're going to do our own street festival. And so we did our street festival. It's called Leederville Carnival. And I was, you know, because I was the event organizer and promoter, I was sort of the guy with the skills in town who could deliver it. And I, you know, as a lot of with these things, any person who's done this sort of doing, citizen doing out there would know, you just sort of work it out as you go. And that whole approach was so incredible for me because it was so emergent, like even because the way that, you know, the Beaufort Street Festival had been set up was it was really a showcase of the town and the culture and the people within that place. You know, you shut off the streets, all the businesses come out, you know, it's all local musicians, it's all local, locally produced. It's just celebrating ourselves and having people, inviting people in to see it. And so because it was so collaborative, there was just something about these events that were like just so authentic and attractive to people. And so, yeah, you know, John's festival went on to have 100,000. Ours went on to not quite get that many, but I think we had 60 or 70,000 at 1 year. And hilariously, at the same time, I had just had a child and I was having a bit of a crisis myself because I was, yeah, nightclub promoter, sort of basically party boy, kind of having a good time, and sort of feeling like, I think there's something more to this life thing, you know. I guess having a child will always maybe help speed up that process. But, yeah, fortunately, because I was a nightclub promoter and basically worked two nights a week and made a living out of it, I was able to spend 2, 3, 4 days a week basically just sitting on a rock and thinking. And I did that for about 2 years. And interesting, I feel like I just have gone the same journey you have gone, John, in terms of, yeah, it was really sort of just picking it all apart. And I actually ended up with, I started with, well, why isn't anyone doing anything about climate change? Why? And immediately you think, well, why isn't government doing anything about that? And then you're like, oh, hang on, well, government, why isn't government doing anything about that? Oh, because they're constrained. Why are they constrained? Oh, because we live in a culture of blame, because they're risk adverse, because everything is lumped on their shoulders, so they're overwhelmed. This sort of basically consumer culture that we live in is what's actually holding us back and destroying the planet at the same time, as they're so wasteful and, you know, all of that obvious. Everyone knows that. So I was sort of like, then my brain actually went, well, what's the opposite of consumption? Oh, it's creation. And then I was sort of went down this other rabbit hole and I found this thing called creativism, which was actually a term that Steve Jobs coined, which was basically kind of the original ethos of Apple, which was essentially, you know, amplifying people to be able to create, you know, and that everything is, and, you know, he was sort of famous for quotes like, you know, everything in the world, you have the power to create and change everything. Everything is a creation. And you have the ability to change it. And it's the sort of misfits and weirdos who often do that, the, you know, changing. And so I sort of became obsessed with this idea of creativism. And then I was like, oh, and then I was really interested in the creative process because I was a musician as well. So I was sort of playing in bands and stuff. I could really relate to this idea. And then you sort of linking it back to, well, you know, yeah, so this consumerism thing's really stuffing us up. If the antidote is creation, then we actually have to recreate the way that we live entirely, you know, and that's going to take a lot of creative power. But then I was still sort of like going through this process and at the same time doing these street festivals and town teams started here in Perth. And then I was sort of like, hang on a minute, like I'd sort of had this penny drop moment where it was kind of like, hang on, this is actually
this is the
work. I'm already doing the work. being in town teams and doing it at a local level and bringing people together and recreating mindsets. And, you know, it's like, oh, shit. And that's when it's like, oh, yeah. And this, and then, you know, we've sort of evolved to be, yeah, it's citizen. It's this active being part of your local community, being part of changing and shaping your own neighbourhoods.
We've got an episode coming up very shortly where we had Brian Eno as our guest talking about art and democracy and the attitude of the artist, and being one where what you're doing is you're essentially kind of rehearsing possible futures. Like that's what art is. Like it's a creation of a possibility that you can experience briefly and decide whether you like it or not. He talks about, and I think that in a way that's what those festivals are at their best. They're expressions of and rehearsals of and experiments in what a community could be.
Yeah.
But then, then town teams started to form as sort of organisational carriers of these different ways of doing things, of people stepping into a role as creators and citizens rather than just consumers.
Yeah, so it was like it's creative doing. So it's like, so that's what started happening was we were doing the festivals and everything. That was all really fun and empowering. And it's kind of, oh, well, what else can we do?
Yeah.
What other ideas have we got? You know, and it's like, oh, yeah, let's do yarn bombing, or, you know, oh, let's build a park bench and put it in the street, and, oh, no, let's put a bathtub in the street and put it, plants in it, you know, or, you know, like crazy, wacky ideas. And then we were sort of getting away with it. And then at first, yeah, you know, as John explained, at first the council was really against it, but then... But because it was all the stuff that we were doing was so popular, they had to sort of just change their tune, and then they sort of ended up joining in with us. And then of course I had my penny drop moment, and then I was like, no, this is the work. How can we help more people do this, have this amazing experience where they feel completely empowered to literally change the place where they live? And that was when we started Town Team Movement, which was an underarching organisation, not-for-profit organisation that was basically dedicated to what Kendall was talking about in terms of reducing the barriers for people to be able to do this, creating a support network for them to feel supported in doing it, try and help them find funds, try and get local governments on board, and the system change work, which I know you're talking about, which is a massive piece. Because that was the other thing that was happening, was that we were finding, yeah, for, you know, people who were starting to try and do this work in their own towns without any support, they would quickly get disenfranchised because it just all became too hard. Because if you, you know, you go excitedly to your local council and say, oh, I want to put a fridge full of flowers on the sidewalk, of course they're going to say no or whatever, you know. But, yeah, so we've had to sort of work out how to just get the balance between, yeah, local government and community doing, and yeah.
I'll come to you, Kendall, on this, because you've got a lovely way of articulating this as an organisation and as a movement now, this thing about the virtuous cycles and the sort of vicious cycles we can get into. Can you just say a bit more about the vicious cycle and then how you flip it?
Yeah, absolutely. So through, I guess, as the movement's evolved and all of our observations and learnings really pointing to this idea that, you know, top-down government approaches and passive consumer behaviours are mutually reinforcing. And so, you know, what's happened over time is participation in community life has been declining. And as that participation has been declining, governments have had to do more. They've had to fill the gap. But as they've started to fill the gap, they've started to corporatise community and layer in a whole bunch of processes and risk management and barriers, essentially, to community participation, because as they're doing more, they're, I guess, becoming personally accountable for the risk, but then and then trying to deflect that risk back onto community through a bunch of paperwork and costly insurances that just make it too hard to do. So we need to interrupt that loop. We need to
just to make it really explicit. So you have citizens doing less and government delivering more, but in delivering more, creating structures that make it more difficult for citizens to do. So citizens doing less, government doing more, citizens do less, government do more. And but then you get to a point where government can't actually do it anymore.
That's right. It's, you know, you ask any local government in Australia, you know, how their budget is looking and how much they can afford to do, and it's never enough. Because, you know, it's local government's not designed to fund community. It's a different function, really. And so trying to pay for community or deliver community as a service is very expensive.
There's a wonderful soundbite I came across recently. Trevor Noah said the more the economy grows, the more you have to pay for the village.
Exactly.
Which is pretty much the vibe, right? And so you guys... And it's really interesting how actually the story you tell is pretty sympathetic towards government, actually, right? Like you're not saying
absolutely, yeah. Well, Cormac Russell actually speaks to this really beautifully, but he sort of says, you know, your civil servants are your community's closest allies. They've dedicated their careers and their professions in service of community. And so, you know, we encounter so many incredible local government professionals or, you know, people in institutions more broadly who we call the system doers, who are the change makers trying to pull the levers. They want to achieve the same outcome as community, and they're so empathetic towards that. But they're just snowed under, and the struggle is so intense for them. But what our movement sort of seeks to do is help them feel seen and to connect with others so they don't feel like a crazy, isolated person who only cares about this stuff, that there's a whole movement of people really trying to work towards it, changing the system for the better.
So we've diagnosed a vicious cycle of citizens doing less, government doing more, citizens becoming consumers, government becoming deliverers. But we've also diagnosed the kind of standing army, as it were, on both sides of that, where there's this sort of will on the part of citizens to do more and not be consumers, mm-hmm. and a whole load of ideas and energy sort of ready and maybe having the odd festival, and then a standing army of system doers, system change makers, finding one another and being ready to do things slightly differently. So then you're flipping that and you're creating a virtuous cycle, not a vicious cycle, right?
Yeah, that's right. So we essentially are building a bridge between the two of them and creating a safe space for them to come together and actually talk in collaborative terms to actually co-design solutions together, because there is so much tension and there are really fractured relationships. There's very low trust. And so our work is really centered in trust, and we have to demonstrate through positive local doing and supporting those local doers in having those really productive, proactive conversations to then demonstrate to those local government professionals that they can actually trust community to do this stuff. And it's helpful, I think, as well, knowing that there is, you know, an intermediary organisation like our movement that is backing them up in that too.
So your role almost is a kind of confidence builder,
a translator,
a holder of the space, so that each can stop retreating from one another and actually start to step towards each other.
Absolutely, and you know the goal is a shared responsibility. So what does, you know, that's going to look slightly different in each place, and that's okay. But how do we get to that middle ground? That's where the work's centred.
And what's so there's 180 town teams, 150 odd in Western Australia, and you're starting to. I mean, I've been in Perth now for 24 hours or so, and I'm seeing visibly manifest the results of that, the kind of the manifestations of that. Where does the dream take you? Like, what's the vision for this? Where does this go from here?
Well, yeah, I think, well, certainly what we're learning that, yeah, the more people who become part of the movement, the more things do shift. And yeah, you know, it is exciting now to walk around the state and see all the work that everyone's been doing that's part of this movement. The physical changes in the main streets and neighbourhoods and town centres, which predominantly is about making places more friendly for people. So, yeah, you walk through Leederville today with where we put a town centre in and lots of parklets, which is basically a parklet is where you take out a car bay and put in seating and for people to be able to just sit and hang out on the street. We're going to take you after this down to Fremantle, where a town team down there is doing rewilding, where they're lifting up all the pavement and putting in plants and trees. And yeah, you know, the guys are down in Ongerup today, like helping Cassie down there in doing their main street makeover. And so I think you think about, and then you think about being able to see it, but it is a bit of a tip of an iceberg in terms of all the work underneath, in terms of all that system change, the education, the conversations, the thousands and thousands of conversations underneath that have had to make that all possible, because it is a different way of doing, like with citizen led.
And you've built you've built trust over a long period of time and moved at the speed of trust pretty slowly. But now there's starting to be some really structural shifts. So now that the Streets Alive program, like actually significant government resource starting to open up at state level behind this kind of work. Can you tell me a bit more about that program and how that came about? Maybe Kendall, I'll come to you on that.
Yeah. So Streets Alive is definitely an outcome of the movement, building trust at scale. So, when that started 2 years ago, there was a similar number here in Western Australia of active town teams, over 150 communities who are building positive relationships at a local government level. State government are aware of that and therefore trust town team movement as a non-profit organisation to help them with their change agenda too. And so we one of the original funders of Town Team Movement, RAC, were really focused on making more livable places through, speed reduction and active transport. So we had demonstrated through their funding program that town teams could do really meaningful, impactful projects. So fast forward, the state government then said, well, we've got this objective of speed reduction, but we want to do that from a grassroots level. So we want to change the attitudes and behaviours.
Rather than just changing the speed limit at a sort of government does this to the little people
That's
vibe.
Right. Just to start a conversation around the role of a local road and the importance of that in the context of a high street or a main street or a town centre or a small community. And, what happens if we've got more kids walking and riding to school, more people feeling comfortable to walk around their neighbourhood to play out of the front yard? How does that actually transform a place, make it more vibrant? How does that reduce isolation and loneliness and actually strengthen relationships and strengthen the social fabric of place through this one objective of speed reduction? And so, the opportunity then to work with the state government to design a behaviour change program that builds the capacity of local people and importantly creates a space for us to bring local government and community together to solve that problem together, which is where all majority of our work is spent through that program, was hugely exciting, and it's never been done before in that way.
So we're talking like millions of dollars now coming from a road safety budget to support community organisations to animate their places with murals and public art and festivals and these kinds of things in a way that creates a different atmosphere on these roads, creates a different conversation about speed and in some cases I understand, like actually does lead to communities actively embracing lower speed limits.
Yeah, that's right. So there's already examples of that where, you know, permanent speed reductions have been put in place as a result of Streets Alive project. I mean, that's the end game. We're only, you know, 2 years in now. So the first batch of project at the $5,000 level, which is more around the community conversation and co-design piece, even though they're the first rounds to be completed, they've still achieved speed reduction. We haven't even got up to the $100,000 projects being completed yet. So that's, you know, hugely exciting and a great indicator to us that this stuff is working.
I think it's so fascinating as a Londoner when the clean air zones, ultra low emission zones come in London, there's a huge kind of political backlash and a really kind of dangerous moment in some ways for democracy. And it just makes me think, like, imagine if a really quite a tiny proportion of the city budget had gone to community organisations to be animating their places and potentially holding some of these conversations, creating some of these sort of deliberative spaces, whether we might actually have given Londoners a way to express their kind of love of place and actually kind of actually become advocates of clean air in local communities rather than it sort of coming in from the outside and then triggering a backlash. It's quite a smart way of thinking about these things.
Yeah, I think, and you know, that's the other exciting thing that is a product of this Streets Alive is that yeah, it works. It's proven now. We've got an amazing impact report, which is just 2 years in, and it's still so early, but the results are incredible. And so, yeah, now we have got this model whereas, you know, in this case, the state government funds and also gives us regulatory power to be able to work, which we then transfer to the community and local governments. And the way that Kendall has constructed the grants actually means that it's basically forcing them to collaborate, because the money can either go to the community group, but then they need to have the permission from the government to do the project, or the money can go to the government, but they have to have a community group that they're collaborating with locally.
Very smart.
So they have to. So we're forcing them to, well, if you want the money and you want to be part of this, you need to collaborate. And it's worked, you know. You know, some with you a few little kicks and but for the most part, it's worked. And I think you're right, John, and that's sort of what we're thinking now, and especially, you know, that it is proven. Now we do have the trust of the state government. There's such a good vibe even from local government sector for us and for this program. And, we're now really taking off. It's sort of like, what other challenges can we use this model to tackle? And
right.
Yeah, that could be clean air, that could be greening, that could be health, that could be, you know, you name it. I think it's pretty exciting.
So that relationship, the core of it is that relationship, actually.
Yep. Yeah, absolutely. Mm. Yeah. So it's shifting trust through active doing. And proving to each other that, okay, we can actually come together and solve this problem, and therefore next time when there is something else we want to do, we can come together on that again and do more and do it differently and start to, yeah, stretch out into that grey area that people are often too scared to go.
I love this. It's like at the moment it feels like everywhere we're so stuck in that vicious cycle of not just of government doing more and citizens doing less, but also of as you say, of people trusting government less and then government trusting people less. And these two things are like the trust and the action pulling apart. And it can feel like that's totally irreversible and like we're doomed. And yet what you guys have shown really practically is that is a dynamic, that is a vicious cycle, but because it's a feedback loop, it can also be reversed. Mm-hmm. And actually that the momentum can build in the opposite direction and we can get to some really positive stuff. It can take a while to get that reversal started, because you do have to move at the speed of trust to some extent, at least. And the speed of trust at the beginning maybe is pretty slow because it's been so eroded. But once that trust starts to build, then the momentum can build. It feels like you guys might be just at the beginning of a real acceleration, which is exciting to be here to see.
It does feel like that. I think that's a really good way of putting it, actually. And the doing seems to speed up that process because it's actually working together, completing a project together, seeing the outcome, seeing the response, the positive response from community. It sort of seems to speed up that process. And because, as you said, it's in the commons and because it's place-based, everyone can get involved. And we see, and the other incredible thing about what's happening with this approach is that we're getting bipartisan support. You know, the Greens Party are involved, the Teals are involved, Labor is heavily involved, Liberal MPs are involved, National MPs, which are the sort of rural party, love it. So it's because we're sort of able to take out the politics because it's for the greater good and because it's popular. And that's really, really exciting because then you start thinking, wow, you know, this has got longevity because everyone is committed. And I think part of that has also been that because of the MPs are getting the kudos because ultimately it's the state money which is part of, you know, and so they're able to promote it to their local electorates. Hey, there's these grants that the state government's giving out that we're giving out, you know, even though Town Team Movement's administrating it, it's the government that's giving it out. So they get to look really good. They feel a part of it because they are. And, you know, so now we've got dozens of MPs who are actively promoting the program and getting their people involved in something that is traditionally been a real sore point for government because they're always been blamed because, you know, there's X amount of 100 people have been killed on the roads this year. But this is a tool that they can use to positively say, well, we're doing something about it. You can do something about it too. And it's cool.
It is cool. Okay, one last place I want to take this, which is there something like uniquely Aussie about this? Like, can this happen anywhere? Or is this part of me comes here and I'm like, there's just a kind of, oh, yeah.
Give it a go, mate.
Give it a go, mate.
Yeah.
Do you think that's so true, or do you think this, or do you think this can happen anywhere?
I think it can happen anywhere, but I think that it is because of our culture over here in WA. Like, we really do have a great culture in the sense that we do. You know, we're really, you know, people talk about it as a cliche, as Australian values that, you know, it's give it a go and give everyone a fair go. That's like the classic Australian cliche, but I think it is actually pretty right. Like, we do have that culture over here, would you say, Kendall?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Like, I think it's definitely, there's a little bit of that in our DNA, all wanting to chip in and get it done together. But I guess we always talk about this sort of remembering idea, and we're helping people remember that it's okay to come together to create change. And that's been forgotten as we're participating less in community life. It's just like the knowledge is sort of getting a little lost. And, the knowledge that feeling of contribution is so powerful, like that's where true abundance comes from. So you sort of unlock it all. And we remember that, it's possible.
Yeah, I think, actually. Sorry, go on, Jeff.
Oh, yeah. So I was just going to build on that because I think it's a really important point, like, because a lot of it is it's re-empowering ourselves as well. Like, because, and I think when you, for anyone who's done any sort of community project and, you know, and often the harder it is, the more fulfilling it is. But even if it's not hard, it's still fulfilling because you're tapping into something that you can't tap into as a consumer where you just earn money and buy shit. I love that Fight Club line, you know, earn money to buy shit. You don't need to impress people you don't like. You know, that's sort of one of our mantras, hilarious. But this is sort of like do something good for people who, you hope will like it. And then if they do like it, then that's a bonus. But even if they don't like it, it's like, fuck yeah, I did that, you know?
And do stuff that's free to impress people you do like and yeah. do stuff that you do care about.
Yeah, yeah. funny that. Yeah, yeah, but it is. And it's like, I don't know. For me, it's been fulfilling. You know, we talk about happiness, you know, separate to fulfillment. And I think real fulfillment comes when you know that you really did something of real value, you know, and all that other consumerism stuff just feels pretend.
Yep.
You know, and
I think and what I'm hearing as you talk about this and thinking to the question of like, is this uniquely Aussie or can it happen anywhere? It's like what I'm hearing, I think, is that it's actually pretty fundamentally human.
Yeah.
Mm.
But maybe the kind of, oh yeah, give it a go, is just the sort of, forgive my appalling Australian accent, but it's sort of those words have to be delivered in that accent. that might be the lever to awaken that, to provoke the memory, to remember it here. And there might be slightly different ways to wake it up in different places. But the thing that you're waking up is pretty fundamentally human.
Absolutely.
Authentically human.
Yeah, it's we're a social species. Yeah. We're actually, you know, I don't think by design meant to be individualistic. It's just something through different sort of forces that have kind of landed us here where we are today.
But we want to be seen. We want to feel like we can make a difference in the world. We want to feel like we belong.
Mm. And yeah, we want to do the best for the collective, really. And that's what this type of contribution makes you realise. It's really about reciprocity. And that's hugely powerful. That's where abundance comes from, that feeling of abundance. It's not through consumerism.
This was How to Save Democracy, the podcast for people who love democracy but know we've got serious work to do to save it.
How to Save Democracy is produced in partnership with The Conduit and wouldn't be possible without the kind support of Open Society Foundations and you, our listeners. We've got big plans, so if you can chip in to help us make them happen, we'd love to have you on board.